Hello everybody and welcome to today's podcast. Today it's our great pleasure to welcome Tricia Carey of Lensing. Tricia is based in New York and holds the position of the Director of Global Business Development, but that's not all. As an advocate for innovation and sustainability in the textile and the apparel industry, Tricia also serves as Secretary of Accelerating Circularity Project, is a member of the FIT Textile Department Advisory Board, and was the chair at the Textile Exchange from 2014 to 2018. In 2020, she was nominated as the B2B Content Marketer of the Year by Content Marketing Institute, and she's been a speaker at various industry events, including the United Nations, Transformers, Text World, Premier Vision, Wear Conference, and many, many more. Today, Tricia directs the global segment for Lensing Apparel, as well as the America Business Development Teams, with a specialist interest in advancing more sustainable apparel development from fibre to consumer use. Tricia, welcome to today's podcast.
Thank you, Debbie. It's a pleasure to be here today. And thank you for hosting this podcast and making the world a little smaller, connecting us during this time.
We certainly do have to make sure that the voices and all the incredible experience within our industry finds a platform and finds that channel for communication. We all need it right now, don't we?
We sure do.
So without further ado, I'll move straight into our first question, Tricia. Can you give us an insight into your career path, your personal journey, and your passion for sustainability?
Well, Debbie, my career path, I would say it probably started when I was a teenager. And growing up, I'm the youngest of three girls, and my mother would not let any of the hand-me-downs go to waste. And I would be stuck with these clothes that I didn't really want to wear. And that inspired me to start learning how to sew. And with that, then I became very interested in fabrics and wanted to understand more about the art and the craft behind the fabrics. And that led me then to choose a path in fashion merchandising. And I went to Marywood University in Scranton and had 1 year at FIT in New York City, where I took the textiles class and really grew to have this admiration for textiles, understanding warp, weft, knit constructions, that there was this tangible element to fabrics, and yet every fabric could be crafted in a unique way. Then I had more exposure to some of the people in the textile industry and felt that I had found the niche of the market that I wanted to be in. So that was kind of where my journey went. And I wound up staying in New York City. Because as the song says, if you can make it there, you can make it anywhere, with Frank Sinatra. And so I really loved the energy of the city, and that kind of contributed to everything that I felt around beginning my career. And so I worked in a domestic textile company and then moved into a women's wear brand where I was buying fabrics, and then eventually led over to working with Tencel. But, you know, this passion that I've had for sustainability, I would say, has really evolved in understanding more around what is needed. And when you look at the size of our apparel industry, $2.4 trillion, is such a global powerhouse. And then when we look at, you know, average apparel is only worn 10 times, and that has decreased 35% over the past 15 years, you start to make these connections and say, you know, where are all these clothes going? When you're in a store and you see the store completely filled with apparel, who's buying it all? Where is it all going? And, you know, you start to see this increase in consumption and wonder, isn't there a better way of doing it all? The resources that we have on our planet are limited, and that's where we have to look to address it within the textile and apparel industry.
Absolutely. So how did you become involved with the sourcing and development of textile fibers within Lensing?
In New York, while being a fabric buyer for the women's wear company, I would attend some of the presentations of Tencel, and I was just amazed that this fiber could come from trees. And I was so intrigued by the storytelling and the marketing of the team that was there. So sitting as a customer, listening to everything, and this was in the mid-1990s, because Tencel at the time was only new in the market. It came into the market in 1992, and this was around 1997. And there was a position that I saw was open. It was advertised when there were trade papers, and I applied and thought, well, this is really such an amazing opportunity to be a merchandiser, and to have the chance to explain more around this fiber. Over the years now, I mean, Lenzing is actually a $2.2 billion company. We have seven manufacturing facilities around the world. We make 1 million tons of fiber, and we have 7,000 employees. When I started in 1998 as an associate merchandising manager, after having 5 years in the industry, I guess I didn't realize, all of this global scope that was going to be coming, the changes that were happening, especially in the early 2000s, as Asia opened up more for sourcing. And at that time, when I started, fabrics were $10 a yard versus now when the sweet spot's like 250 a yard.
It's
And
crazy,
so
isn't
through,
it? Yeah.
yeah, yes. And so through various positions I've had within the company and staying in New York City, I've gone from working in different market segments, from focusing on menswear, to then working with some of our bigger global accounts, and now overseeing the focus that I have on the global denim, and then also working with the Americas team out of the New York office. So the market has evolved and changed, and my roles at Lenzing have really changed to suit that.
That's great. Why, Tricia, why is the development of innovative new fibers, or perhaps the repurposing of original fibers, so essential now?
It is essential now, and I look at fiber development very similar to we see all the technology that's happening with our phones. Each generation of your iPhone, the iOS upgrades that you have, this integration of technology and also with nature, and as this evolves, that allows us to continue to develop our fibers and to utilize less resources. So we actually make three generations of man-made cellulosic fibers, or recently I've been hearing people say human-made cellulosic fibers. And each generation has lower impacts on the environment. They have greater performance with more strength. And so it's amazing to see this weaving back and forth between technology advances that are happening, what's needed, and the demands of the consumer, and how we can continue to evolve and develop. So new equipment is coming in. We have, new innovations also on digitalization that are impacting our fibers and even how we communicate about our fibers, and how, of course, transparency and traceability, which is more and more important.
Yeah, so important, so important. Tricia, can you explain to us what Lenzing botanic fibers are and why their development is so important for the fashion industry?
So Lenzing's fibers are derived from trees. So we use a variety of different species of trees. Eucalyptus, beech, spruce are some of the common ones. And so we are able to convert those trees. We either make or buy the pulp. Then we add a solvent, so it becomes a liquid, think like a honey type consistency, which is then extruded through spinnerets. And here I like to give the visual of like a shower head. So you're pushing this dope through the shower head, through the spinnerets, and then you have the fiber, which we can cut into various staple lengths. So we've been making viscose for over 80 years. That fiber is using older technology. We have production facilities at our headquarters in Austria, as well as in China and in Indonesia. And then the next generation is Modelle. Our brand name for Modelle is Tencel. We've been making Modelle for 65 years. This is very similar in the production process to viscose. For lensing, the unique way that we make Modelle is at our integrated site at our headquarters in Austria. So we are tree to fiber. And this is the only plant in the world that's integrated. So there's a huge savings of resources by doing that. And then the third generation is Lyocell, and we brand our Lyocell as Tencel. We've been making Tencel Lyocell for close to 30 years. Came on the market in 1992, and the first commercial production was actually in the United States, Mobile, Alabama, with the British-based company Cortals. So there had been a lot of changes in the market since that time. And with Tencel Lyocell, we have not only the production facility in the United States, but also a facility in Grimsby in the UK, two in Austria, and we are adding another facility in Thailand, which will come on later this year. So the expansion of Tencel Lyocell is really a part of our future. So our three generations fall over viscose, Modelle, and Lyocell, and our traceable viscose we call EcoVero viscose.
So you must have seen some incredible innovations over the years there then, in moving all of those fibers further towards the sustainable practice and sustainable manufacturing methods.
Oh, definitely. And it's interesting because people will come to a trade show and say, well, what's your new fiber this season? It's not that you just create a new fiber every season. There is a huge amount of resources put into R&D, financial. We, you know, we're at the very start. We're the raw material. And as our inputs are only as good as what we can make and further down the whole process of making fabrics. So there's been a lot of innovations that I've seen, you know, and this is where we're always seeking out what is the next thing. There's never complacency with what we have is only being enough.
It's great, isn't it? It's incredible to see how far we've moved just in the last few years. Incredible advances. Of which, of course, is legislation. Tricia, what do you think the most important legislation of the last few years has been, and why do you think that will bring about environmental change?
Well, I think one of the most important, and there's just been so many when you think between social side and, but from an environmental standpoint, I would say the ban on plastic bags that we see that's happened around the world. Worldwide, a trillion single-use plastic bags are being used every year. That's 2 million every minute. Yes. Then the amount of energy required to make 12 plastic shopping bags could drive a car for a mile. So this, you know, plastics, and I'm relating the plastic bag ban back to also synthetics in general and the challenges that we see around synthetics and textiles, I think will have to change. And we'll need to see more legislation in order to deal with all the issues we have around our consumption and around the fact that, you know, could we harvest our closet in order to make new textiles? And will there even be legislation? I know there's a lot going on right now in the EU, the Green Deal, what is happening? How do we have common language? How do we define those terms? How does it work across various industries? So not thinking of just apparel, but also how about textiles for home, looking at non-wovens, all of this is impacting legislation in the future. And I think this is a pivotal time as we are in the decade of action to see what kind of change we can have. I mean, will we reach a point that if retailers sell a product, they have to take it back? You know, do we need to put more responsibility on retailers and brands?
Or it has to be in the margin, doesn't it? That recycling all has to be in the price point.
It has to be added in. So the circular economy and looking at models, you know, we can't measure our success on GDP. We can't measure our success on only the revenue sales of a company. And I think this is a big change that we're going to have to address as we come out of the pandemic and how we look at new business models.
Absolutely. I think it's like a big difference, a new move in the economic sector too, isn't it? More towards kind of donut economics, really, where, you know, business model, why does it have to just keep scaling? Surely you reach a level of sustainability and then you move to a new section. There's so, so much to happen. We need to open our eyes and have a complete rethink, don't we?
We really do, because the way we kept doing it and consuming more and the amount of clothes that don't even reach a store that yeah. sit in warehouses. I mean, this has also been something uncovered during this time that, you know, what are we doing with all this waste? And there's resources that are put in to every single product that's produced. You know, whenever I go to visit a factory, I'm always amazed, you know, a mill. Because I look at everything that goes into it. You know, when you look at how denim is being made, where cotton is coming from, where our fibers have to travel in order to get to spinners, what needs to be done in yarn preparation mm-hmm. and weaving, you know, all of the garment processing that needs to happen, how many hands touch that garment before a consumer even can purchase it. And yet there's sort of this flippant nature of, oh, okay, I have all these clothes and I have more clothes and I keep, you know, disposing of them. So how does that mentality change that we go back to that value? And we go back to the fact of, you know, my mom would never let us throw those clothes away. How do we get to the point that they're treasured and that they really have the value instead of this disposable side that we've been conditioned to over the past decades?
We do have to rethink that price point, don't we? I was chatting strangely with my daughter last night, who showed me a picture on one of her various Instagram feeds that she has. She went, "Hey, Mom, look at this jacket. It's only £15." And I said, "Sophie, you need to question why that's £15.
Yes.
Is that a good buy?" You know, we really do have to open our eyes and really start to rethink, you know, well, how can that T-shirt be £4? As you said, you know, how many hands have touched it? It makes no sense. So, yeah, we all have to completely recondition ourselves, I think, and think very differently as we move forward. And I think a lot of people, or the consensus of people, are trying to do that, which kind of moves us nicely onto our next question. What's the biggest challenge for the fashion designer when sourcing sustainable fabrics for their collections?
Well, I think for designers of some larger companies, the challenge that they have is really having the proper information about the environmental impact. And I'm purposely staying away from the word sustainable because that was my New Year's resolution, was to not use that word. And it does come down to
overused.
It's overused. It's overused, misused, and not having a common definition for everyone. And so I think for designers, their challenge is understanding truly the impact of the fabric and even knowing the social side of what that impact is. I think there's a lot more going on now with awareness around the Xinjiang region and sourcing cotton.
Absolutely.
And this should be questioned by designers, but also understanding the chemicals that are used in producing, understanding what is the end of use, end of life. Are the textiles biodegradable and compostable? So I think having this full picture, and when I talk to designers, I try to tell them, you know, keeping it simple, because designers have many things that they have to take into consideration for what they're developing. And it's hard to be the specialist in understanding environmental impacts and LCA studies and what does this data really mean to them. And that's where if they can just look at the raw material that goes into producing something, the production process, and end of use, after life, to start to put into those three categories to understand. Now, many companies have their own, you know, preferred fibers platform where they try to have a difference and set some guidelines on what is being sourced. So I think that's key for designers in mid to large size companies. I think for smaller companies, for designers maybe of some of the newer direct-to-consumer brands, their challenge is really meeting minimums and having access to materials. Now you're mm-hmm. seeing the influx of digitalization supporting them with many of the platforms of collaboration around dead stock fabrics. So like Queen of Raw,
has done a wonderful job with that, or another platform, SensenB, that you could, as a smaller designer, go onto these platforms, search for your textiles, smaller minimums are there. And again, making the world a little smaller, because maybe those textiles are sitting in a warehouse in Asia and need to be over in Europe or US for the designer to work with. So I find that when we have some smaller designers or that are looking for fabrics, I'm always trying to guide them in the right direction where they can actually meet the right minimums and still have access to the best quality fabrics.
Yeah, we're going to touch on that a little bit deeper later, actually. It's about getting the right minimums at the right price point so they can actually use it in the first place, isn't it, really, as well? There's so yeah. much. But just sticking on one of the challenges for the fashion designer then with regards to sourcing, transparency is now critical if we're to build a sustainably sourced supply chain, regardless of your brand. Could you tell us about Lensing's involvement with the Textile Genesis platform, which is very interesting?
Yes, and as you say, transparency is essential, but with that is traceability too. And now it's not just for environmental reasons. As I said before, it's also what we're seeing on the social side within the industry in sourcing other fibers. And so more than 2 years ago, Lensing started a partnership with Textile Genesis. And Textile Genesis utilizes blockchain in order to trace materials from raw material all the way through to consumer level. So this digitalization is taking off of what we see with blockchain that happens on a currency side. And Textile Genesis has what they call fiber coins. These fiber coins are a way of tracing. And so the blockchain, you know, sets that data and it cannot be changed, and it can go through then each step of the supply process. It's really an incredible platform to see. I've done a couple of beta trials with the Textile Genesis team and some of our US brands, and they can even find out that fabrics were mislabeled for content. That was in one of our trials. So this, I mean, because it's very easy, someone could transcribe the information wrong on, you know, PDFs that are being sent around. So with Textile Genesis, there's a huge amount of data that you can collect, even around carbon footprint. And I think this is really the right way that the industry has to go in having this digital transparency. And I think there'll be additional systems in the future that will further connect it with you know, the garment as it goes through recycle, rental, reuse, that you have basically establish a passport for that garment. And there's a couple of companies out there that are working on this one, Circular ID, Eon, that we've also been working with. And this digital transparency is very interesting because it also, for Lensing, we have an e-branding platform where we actually have a fabric certification then that is provided to the mill for fabrics that are using our fibers. And then this is housed on our e-branding platform, and that is used then for product licenses, marketing, hang tags. And now what we can do is kind of connect that physical that we have with our fabric certification into this digital side. So even with Textile Genesis, we're able to then connect our systems together. So this fabric certification can also be stored on Textile Genesis, as well as other certifications too. So Textile Genesis is working with Textile Exchange, their fabric certification. So as systems connect, this will make it much easier. And then designers will have that transparency to make the right decisions. And ultimately, by utilizing this data from Textile Genesis, you could even look at ways to reduce. And I think, you know, what we saw in some of the trials, the beta testing that we did on with Textile Genesis, is that the mills are also very interested to receive this information. And then they can assess, oh, where could we have efficiencies in what we're doing? And so this collaboration that happens out of this type of information is tremendous.
I think that's the big thing, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, collaboration is absolutely key.
For sure. And in the past, it was okay, well, we're a fiber producer, we sell to the spinner, you know, then the spinner is knitting or weaving the fabric. And it was just this, that chain. And instead, now we become a supply network where we're all working together towards the same goal. And even though for Lensing, we only produce fiber, we connect with everyone being at the very beginning. And it's important now because of what we see happening around circularity.
Tricia, is the Textile Genesis platform open for everybody, companies large and small?
It is open for everyone. Right now, they're doing a lot of work to onboard mills to make it very easy. Mm-hmm. So they Textile Genesis has really only been around for a little over 2 years. They won the Fashion for Good Award. And so they came out of beta testing like the end of last year. So it is open to everyone. You can check out on their website. So Lensing is a supporting partner, but, you know, it is separate from Lensing, and they do work with all fibers. And again, that's how we view it, is that it's not just about one fiber, but, you know, it's around, you know, the way fabrics are developed now of multi-fiber blends. So definitely it's open to everyone. And I think it's be very interesting to watch that space as they continue to develop.
Definitely, because as you say, kind of know, understanding your components and tracing your components is absolutely critical as we move closer and closer to circularity and recycling or repurposing components, and being able to trace exactly what's in that garment or in that batch, whatever it is, really, as we move forward, it's got to be part of the recipe, hasn't it?
It does. And you have to think about it from the very beginning.
You do, which kind of leads me on to my next question for you, actually, Tricia. Circularity. What does that mean, and how can we all make an impact in our design specifications?
Yes, and this is where I think we have to continue to challenge and question more and more, because circularity is about the utilization of materials again. And it could be in a form that it might be used by another industry, or it could be even like a textile to textile circularity that would need to happen. And for Lensing, we look at chemical recycling. So for years, cotton has been mechanically recycled, which is when you take the fabrics, you would take fabrics or garments and you would basically chop them up kind of like a food processor, more or less. And in the end, you'd have cotton staple, shorter lengths, but you could have cotton staple that would be used. And commonly this was done in the denim industry and just kind of worked into their whole process. So it was post-industrial waste that was being used, so their own waste from their factory. And this was always an efficiency that was there, but never quite looked at, I would say, in the way circularity is being looked at now. For Lensing, what we do is we take that cotton waste, post-industrial and post-consumer, we make it into a pulp. So, you know, pulp is made out of cellulose. It could be made out of trees. It could be made out of cotton. It could be made out of, you know, oranges, hemp, whatever. But what we're doing is we're taking cotton waste and then we make it into the pulp. We blend that with our wood pulp. Then we add the solvent. It's a closed loop process. So we reuse that solvent at a rate of over 99.5%. And then we extrude the fiber. So it goes through that same process and we do blend it with wood. And this is the way, I mean, we launched ReFiber technology actually 4 years ago, February 7th of 2017, we launched it. I was looking at some of our old press releases and very proud to be a pioneer in this chemical recycling technology. Now, you know, since that time in 2017, we've worked with more than 25 home and apparel brands for their collections. And we continue to see a huge interest in circularity. And what I love is that there doesn't have to be just one way of doing it. And one of our mill customers in Italy, Candiani Denim, was very innovative. And when he saw this product around having chemical recycling with ReFiber technology, he said, well, look, I've been making the mechanical recycling of cotton. The staple lengths are shorter. If I use the ReFiber technology fiber, the staple lengths are longer. Mixing the two together
would be ultimate, because then you can combine the weaker, shorter staples and have a very strong yarn. And so he did several experiments and came up with a blend that was actually 50% mechanically recycled cotton and 50% refibra, coming up with a denim that used no new cotton, but still had a very traditional denim look. And this was actually a fabric that was submitted for the ITMA Sustainable Innovation Award. And, you know, ITMA only happens once every 4 years. It's the time when the industry gets together for textile manufacturers of the equipment. And Candiani won the Sustainable Innovation Award at ITMA for the innovation using refibra technology. So this is another way where, you know, layering on new ideas. So taking this old idea of the mechanical recycled, layering in the new idea around the chemical recycled, and then coming up with a new product. And that's where we like to see that's driving innovation.
That's great, isn't it? It's so much gentler. It's much gentler on the cotton, as you say, and you're actually saving that raw base and repurposing with no loss of quality. Because as you recycle cotton, you, as you say, you know, you damage it, and then its use for its future uses are not as vast. So it's it's great. There's so many new innovations coming along.
Definitely.
Which kind of leads us onto our next question too, with regard to, I think we may have almost kind of touched on this, I guess textile genesis is really, really helping here, but how do we combat greenwashing? It's a huge issue. And it's estimated that 30% of organic fibers are fake. Do you think that's accurate, Tricia?
I do think that's accurate.
Really?
I think there's the aspect of traceability and transparency, which Textile Genesis and those kinds of systems of having certifications go against. But I see there needs to be more common standards. I mean, it's a little crazy how many certifications and organizations are out there all trying to vie for attention. And many are quite worthy, but it's really difficult, and especially on a fiber producer side where we service many different market segments, anywhere from shoes to denim to bags, home, non-wovens. We have to have so many certifications every year. But I see the greenwashing being a huge issue on the marketing side. What is being told to the consumer? And the nuances of words that are being used. And, you know, this is where anytime that brands are using our brand name and they have to have a license to do so, then we have to check and to verify the claims that they're making. But this is where I see that the challenge on the greenwashing is really what's being said to the consumer. Social media, digitalization of messaging, all of this can really run wild through the market.
So I guess we kind of have to get to labeling, don't we, eventually?
We do have to get to labeling. Yes. And having more of those standards. And then also what's happening in Europe versus the US, globally, how is labeling being done? And I think there have to be more standards that are set, because I am concerned that after this time of the pandemic and the competition that is in the market, will everything be fairly labeled? And does the consumer have the right information to make the proper decision?
Yeah, it's very important. We have to move forward to that objective, don't we? I am conscious of time, Tricia, so I'll just move on. Tricia, what's your advice for a designer, large or small, that wants to adhere to sustainable textiles and environmentally responsible manufacturing processes?
Yeah, so we do get quite a few smaller designers that will come to us through the website. And I'd say there's three things. One, don't reinvent the wheel. Study what other companies are doing, especially regards to preferred fibers or preferred process for lowering impacts. There's already a great deal of data out there. The second is lower your footprint through nearshoring. I think a lot of times I'm talking to designers and they want to go all around the world. And, it's much easier when you can pick up the phone and talk to someone when you can go visit a factory that's nearby. And third is to really build a strong network. Find like-minded people.
Find those that will help you to achieve your goals. Don't work with companies that have too many restrictions and try to get into their mold. I see this all too often. And, you know, what we do is support smaller brands and making that connection to get them to the next step. And it's almost like a matchmaking of people, because that's what our businesses are. We're made up of people and we have to know how to work together. So finding and building that strong network is really essential.
That's great. And I guess that kind of half answers the next question in a way. How do we unlock access at any volume for sustainable textiles? And kind of this question is aimed at, you know, we've got the big brands who can go out there and they can buy whatever meterage, but huge meterages, and commission specifically to sustainable fabrics. But for designers and manufacturers and even printers at the other end of the marketplace, it's not so easy to buy the volumes that you need at smaller scales. How can we unlock that?
Well, I think for some of the smaller designers, as I mentioned, there's some digitalization happening now to kind of connect people and building those networks. But also I've seen that some suppliers are willing to kind of pool the orders together. And again, you know, working in a cooperative way that way. I also know that some of the brands that are small to mid-size in the United States, they have their own little network that they'll talk among the sustainability teams and work together, because then there's accessibility for everyone. I know companies even like Patagonia who are very open-minded to this. So, you know, if they've already developed something with a certain supplier, they realize that there's more benefits if everyone can be developing textiles at lower impacts. So find that power of the group in order to have accessibility. And I know then becomes the challenge of, well, how is it still a unique fabric for my company? I think there's still other ways that you can tweak it.
Do you think we have to get away from that kind of, you know, does the fabric have to be unique to your brand?
Well, I think there's still other ways that it can be unique to your brand, whether it's a color and a print. Now, I know prints are often confined, but is there some other treatment that can be added? Mm-hmm. Is there other styling in a garment to support making it unique for you? And you know, I think overall, we do have to step back from that. Otherwise, we just increase the amount of waste.
Yeah, thousands and thousands of different compositions, blends, and goodness knows. Yeah. How on earth are we going to pull all of that back and recycle it? It's like, whoa.
Right.
Slow down. Right. Yeah, slow down. Concentrate on quality, great design. Absolutely.
Quality, great design, timeless. That's important.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely. Tricia, for the future, last question. Do you think that the global pandemic will finally be the catalyst for change within our industries?
I really do think it'll be the catalyst for a change as a time to recalibrate for the textile and apparel industry. We were doing so many things the same way over and over because we were on this hamster wheel to keep going and keep going. And now we've had that time to reflect. We've seen our flaws. We know that. You see a lot of companies in the past year have been making goals around whether it's climate action, looking at circularity in different ways, reuse, renew, recycle, and really the focus on collaborations. And I think this is where we realize that it's not something about only one company, but how we have to work on it together. So I do see that this time, and you know, especially for the decade ahead, that we will look to make those changes that we necessarily need. And it's also driven by what the consumer is demanding. The consumer is asking a lot more questions. The consumer is looking at what's being done on a social side. And so now is the time to recalibrate our industry.
I don't think we could end on a stronger statement. That's fantastic. Thank you so, so much today, Tricia, for answering all of our questions. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much and have a great day.
Thank you, Debbie. Thanks for this opportunity to speak with you and for the work that you're doing to connect the industry. Thank you.
We'll keep working hard together and we all have to collaborate more. Brilliant. Yes. Thank you so much, Tricia, and you have a great day.
Thanks.